Opening day from the South Side is here. You're listening to our home opener bash live from Cork and Kerry at the park on the flagship home of the White Sox, 720 WGN.
Yep. Everything you just heard is absolutely true. It is opening day for the Chicago White Sox. We're at Cork and Kerry, a stone's throw away from beautiful Guaranteed Rate Field. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder off today, filling in for Wendy, my friend Harry Tynowitz. Harry, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Thank Wendy for taking the day off. You know, in her role as Southpaw, you know, they need her early at the park.
To dress up like Southpaw, so she's getting her bits ready.
Yeah, she's got some wacky bits.
Some crazy bits for 2019. Steve Bertrand is here as well. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Bill. I think my favorite is when she steals home.
Oh, that's always fun.
It is fun, because you don't know head first or feet first until the last second.
It's like when Dick Van Dyke would come home and you'd say, autumn and fall or no autumn and fall.
Would he jump, would he not? Yeah.
Right. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. We have a huge day planned for you. Expected guest sometime in this half hour, future Hall of Famer, the great Harold Baines, will be with us at some point. And then Ed Farmer in the next half hour. We'll talk about White Sox fan experiences after that. And we'll talk about the greatest baseball movies of all time.
Oh, man, where do you start?
Where do you start, Harry?
I would start with Bull Durham. That, to me, is...
Is that the best baseball movie of all time?
That is the best baseball movie of all time. I know people love, you know...
Field of Dreams.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. But
Monty Stratton story. A lot of fans of that movie.
Bang the Drum Slowly,
yes. Of course.
Can you give me Robert De Niro and Mike Moriarty? Can you give me the two Yankee players that were used, their highlights were used in that movie?
Oh, that's a good question, Harry.
You mean film of their highlights?
Yeah. Yes. De Niro played the catcher.
Bruce something, right?
And right, but the actual player that it was based on.
Was it Thurman Munson?
It was Thurman Munson.
Wow.
You can't. You have to get up early in the morning to beat Bill, and I got up like at 6:45, and I still can't beat him.
No, can't do it.
And the other one, Michael Moriarty, Dick McAuliffe?
Mel Stottlemyre,
of course.
I was going to say Mel Stottlemyre.
Mel Stottlemyre.
Say it.
You can win a prize, Steve. So we will have that heated discussion later about the greatest baseball movies of all time. I'm sure most people will vote for either Major League or Major League 2. I'm positive of that.
I completely forgot about those
two
movies, Harry.
Thank you for that, Steve.
Too high.
I don't know who wrote that line, but genius, absolute genius. So let's talk a little bit. Harold Baines is not here yet. We're all awaiting his arrival. You just got to interview him about a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, Carm and I on Saturdays, we do White Sox Weekly, and Harold Baines talked more in the 7 minutes that we had a chance to chat with him than he had in his entire career with the White Sox. He's really come out of his shell, obviously very excited. I tried to clear up the legend with him. There's a legend.
Can I guess what it is?
Yes.
The legend is that Bill Veeck was watching him play.
This guy. I got to wake up at like 3 in the morning.
Now, this is the story we've all been told. Bill Veeck attended a Little League game when Harold Baines was either 12 or 13 years old.
He wasn't at the game. He was, like, in at his house, like, in the backyard, like, having juice, a cigarette, reading the paper, and a baseball came flying into his backyard. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you clear up with Harold Baines if that story has any truth to it or not?
He said it's a little bit true.
Yeah.
It's a little bit country. It's a little bit rock and roll. He said there's some truth to it, but there's some falsehood. And this is the guy the White Sox took number one overall.
Do you know who his first home run was hit off of, his first home run of all time?
Was it you, Bill?
No, it was not me.
Was it B. Arthur?
Oh.
And then there's B. Arthur.
Both tremendous guesses, and you'll find this hard to believe, both incorrect guesses. His very first home run was off the great Jim Palmer, who that day was just wearing his underpants.
I was going to say, was he dressed?
No, just his underpants.
Jim Palmer, October 15th, birthday boy.
Oh, wow. You have to get up pretty early in the afternoon, Harry.
I do.
To fool you with your baseball skills. So I am very excited to meet Harold Baines. He's due here, like I said, sometime in the first half hour. We'll talk to him. Future Hall of Famer, I won't ask with him in the room, but he's not here yet. Were you surprised that he made it into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, no. I thought he'd be in before this. I think that Harold Baines was one of the great hitters of all time. He took a ton of walks, he impacted the game.
Mm-hmm.
He impacted the game. Guys knew, oh, man, if we pitch to this guy, Harold could be coming up with an extra guy on base.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were in the Sox lineup, it was a nice thing having Harold Baines hitting behind you because they they were forced to bring the ball across the plate.
So I was at the game when they retired his number.
Number three.
Yeah. And he was playing for another, we were talking about, was it the Rangers?
Yeah.
He used to be, yeah.
So he was playing, so he came into town playing for the Rangers, and they retired his number as a White Sox.
And Jerry Reinsdorf said it's one of the bigger mistakes that he ever made.
Why?
Because he felt like it, you know, looking back on it now, he loved Harold Baines. Harold Baines was a great player. But he said, looking back on it now, it was just weird to have a guy in another team's uniform coming in, and then there's number three on the wall for that same guy.
So it was kind of weird to be rooting against him on the day they retired his number.
I know. Very strange.
So if he had to do it over again, White Sox ownership, he would have still retired his number but waited until he was not playing for the Texas Rangers, right? Is
right.
That what you're saying?
Right. I think that's what the move would have been.
Yeah. He's one of the first guys, unless I'm wrong on this, but I think he's one of the first guys in the Hall of Fame who was almost exclusively a DH, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for years, he was only a DH. You hardly ever saw him in the field.
Right. I remember him playing right field. He was pretty good in right.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, no, he played DH mostly. And so, you know, that's how he's going in. Yeah, people will remember him as being one of the great designated hitters of all time.
Yep. All right. Well, we will meet with Harold Baines. He's scheduled to be here sometime in the first half hour. The great Ed Farmer, friend to the show, Ed Farmer, will join us after that, and a whole lot of more coming your way after. So stick around. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. White Sox home opener bash. We're broadcasting live from Cork and Carry at the park. It's all sponsored by Goose Island. That's Chicago's beer. Cork and Carry at the park is the place to go on game day. Only a couple blocks from Guaranteed Rate Field on the corner of 33rd and Princeton. They have a variety of Goose Island beers on tap and the best food in the neighborhood. So stop on by, say hello to all of us, and enjoy a tasty Goose Island beer.
They got a variety of the executives, the brewmaster. They're all here.
I saw them all.
Yeah.
Where do you guys see the goose inside?
I heard. Yeah.
Right field.
Explain this to me, Harry. This is part of White Sox Park that has been revamped to look almost tropical, right? There's waterfalls.
Yeah.
There's a giant goose.
When they say come back to the island, they're talking about the right field seats now.
And when I hear Harry talk about a giant goose, it's just not what I picture.
they've got like a 20-foot goose head. And it's in right field. It's as Bill mentioned, it's surrounded by water.
Remember that scene in The Godfather where the guy woke up with a giant goose head in his bed? Oh, was that crazy.
He'll never get this part in the movie.
Right, John Barley.
Who knew a goose had that much blood?
Right. So I don't know. Bill and I were trying to figure out if he was named Gossage.
Wouldn't that be the perfect name for him?
Yeah.
That would be perfect.
And the other question is, when you hit it on a fly, if you hit a home run off the goose's head, does it honk?
Oh, that would be even more dimensional.
That would be dimensional.
I would love to see that.
Even more dimensional was your second album.
Right. Didn't sell well.
I don't know why.
Very,
it
very
didn't.
Sad.
Did you guys ever go under the shower in the outfield?
Oh, yeah.
Bill Beck days?
With Bill Beck.
Oh, really?
Yes. Right. I mean, everybody was.
Soap? Was there soap?
No, there wasn't soap. Everybody, and of course we're talking about the greatest promotional king in the history of baseball.
Oh, Bill Beck was for sure.
Yeah, and he was out there one day, and there was literally a shower in center field.
Right.
People were lined up, and Bill Beck was out there, like, just pulling the cord.
I think the greatest thing, well, I shouldn't say the greatest thing he brought to baseball, the thing that always fascinated me was on home plate for a while, they had this device that would pop up and blow the dust off of home plate. It would go in a circle. Did you ever see this, Jerry? You know what I'm talking about?
That was my Aunt Molly.
Oh, that was your Aunt Molly.
Yes.
The next time you see her, please tell her that it captivated me as a boy. It was this little silver tube that would pop up from home plate and just blow all the dust off.
It was really cool. Now, you're taking me back to an era. Do you remember the first White Sox mascot that I remember was a clown?
Andy the Clown.
Andy the Clown.
Yep.
Oh, Andy got shut out of the new park. That was the whole thing.
Yes.
He started a little campaign. And
Andy was the one who came up with the phrase, and I didn't realize this until Andy would yell it at me very loudly, over the fence is a home run.
He hit a flower.
Yes.
And he would give it to everybody. You'd take the end with the where the flower was, and he would just be holding the stem still.
Yes, yes. I like the way he just gave up on his makeup at some point. Like, he would, most of his face was made up in clown, but at some point he would just stop. He just went, I don't have to do the whole face. Just part of my face.
You know, Maria Osmond still does that.
Harry, talk about. I always hear baseball players talk about the magic of opening day, but as a super fan of baseball, what's different about opening day for a baseball team?
Oh, it's just, you know, it's that air of excitement, Bill. You know, as Billy Williams says, there's an air of electric in the air,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's early in the season, so anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Yoan Moncada is crushing the ball like we thought Yoan Moncada would crush the ball.
Right.
Lucas Giolito, you know, threw goose eggs for six innings on the road. Anything is possible now. The bunting is out. You know, the red, white, and blue bunting. Not the advanced runner bunting.
Right.
But the red, white, and blue bunting hangs from the, you know, from the stalls and, you know, from the sides of the park. And I just think that, like, you know, all winter long, when it's cold, when it's snowing, living in Chicago, you know, you look forward to opening day when you can get that first Goose Island, when you can get those first seven hot dogs.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's so exciting.
Sure, it definitely is.
I was thinking in that way, sort of coming out of hibernation, driving around the park this morning, and, you know, it's like this coming to life. It's almost like a spring flower blooming, you know.
Yeah.
The people are back at their stations. They're saying hello to old friends. They're getting reacquainted. And, yeah, I just love that.
I think with other sports, it holds that same intrinsic value. But with baseball means summer.
Yeah,
so
right.
So it's like, it really is. It's like the beginning of the warm weather and the whole summer thing. It's beautiful.
And also, the other thing is, like, growing up, you know, when you're a kid watching the baseball playoffs, it's so cool when everybody gets introduced.
Right.
They introduce the entire roster, 25 guys.
Yep.
They introduce the coaches, the trainers,
yep.
plural.
Yep.
And, you know, in Chicago growing up, there's not a lot of that. You know,
right.
not enough of that.
Yeah, I know.
So it's cool to see the entire team introduced, you know, along the third base line.
Yep. I was telling one of my daughters that...
the one you like the best?
No, the one I like second best.
Okay.
I was telling her that when I was a kid and we would go to baseball games, I'd bring some of my baseball cards with me. Whoever the White Sox or the Cubs were playing, I would bring the Cubs and the White Sox and also their opponent. And her question was a really good one. I want to make sure I get this word for word. She goes, why? And I can't fully explain it, but it was just, it for me, it added to the dimension of watching the game to have all their stats in front of me, to know what team they used to be
in. Did you hope they would sign it?
No.
That's just you. You're collecting trivia while you're watching the...
I think that's what it is, Steve. Right. I think it was just adding to the all the facts that were already on the card. Sometimes on the Topps cards, they would have fun facts in the upper right-hand corner.
Uh-huh.
In the off-season, Rob likes to go fishing. You know, that kind of thing. And you go, oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
That's great. I used to love the little caricatures they did.
Yes.
You know, the Angels had this guy, Alex Johnson, who hit a home run his first time up.
Yeah.
And his little caricature was Alex's first taste of baseball resulted in a long one. And they had a guy cutting into, like, a fork with a fork and knife cutting into a baseball.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I remember going to a game one time with my parents and telling my mom I wanted to bring my mitt, you know, mm-hmm. with the idea that... And she's like, honey, they're not going to play catch with you.
No, Mom. That's not it.
No. There was a game I was at once where I wore the glove from the time we walked into White Sox Park mm-hmm. until the end. I just had the glove on at all times. And the one time, it was the bottom of the eighth inning, and I took the glove off, and I had my hand in popcorn, and the ball was hit right where I was sitting. The 1 second I didn't have my hand in the glove.
Oh, that is brutal.
So frustrating.
Who signed your first glove?
I'm trying to remember who signed my first
Steve,
glove.
Tommy Helms.
Tommy Helms, glove number 19.
From the Phillies?
Right? Phillies.
Reds. Second baseman. I think he played with Houston also.
I think he did end up.
He was a longtime Red, number 19.
When you say signed it, though, do you mean it came that way with his signature?
Yeah, you'd buy a mitt and they would have a signature.
Yeah.
But I played first base and I had a...
Oh.
I don't remember who signed my first baseman's mitt, but I know it had a big Sears logo on it.
Where I got the glove.
Joseph Sears.
Yeah, Sears.
Harry, why was it when you would buy a wiffle ball,
uh-huh.
it almost always had Cincinnati Reds players' pictures on there? There would be, on the box for the wiffle ball, it was always Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion. Why the Cincinnati connection with wiffle balls? Do you know?
I don't know. I know they're the oldest franchise in the history of baseball. I know Cincinnati is the Queen City.
Yeah.
And I know that where Venus Flytrap is very popular, I've always preferred Dr. Johnny Fever.
That may be fiction.
What?
That could be fictitious.
What are you saying?
I don't want to ruin anything for you.
God is my witness.
There's a chance it's fictitious.
But turkeys could fly.
Here's the game plan, everybody.
Uh-huh.
Harold Baines, unable to attend today's festivities.
Look at you.
Actually, he's been here for a half hour. He just still doesn't talk very much.
Right. Very, very rough.
Harold, say something.
And now, Harold?
We've tried our best to get him to talk, but he's just a man of few words. No words in today's broadcast. However, Ed Farmer is confirmed, and we'll talk to us very, very soon. So we'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then more of us live right across the street as the White Sox open up their 2019 season. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy.
The Goose Island is cold, the party is happening, and we're welcoming the White Sox back to Chicago. The home opener bash continues on 720 WGN.
It's Bill Left along with Harry Tynowitz sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Steve Bertrand is here. We're at Cork and Carry right across from Guaranteed Rate Field. And on the line with us, the great Ed Farmer. Ed, how are you?
I'm well. I'm a little cool, but, you know, opening day warms everybody up, I think. Just listening to the group you got over there at the Cork and Carry.
A lot of people, very loud people, having a good time, just what you'd hope for. Ed, what about the decision to move opening day from yesterday to today? A good decision all in all?
Please. Yesterday was going genius move. Yeah, when the sun never came out, it rained all day. Temperature really never got out of basically the high 30s, or didn't feel that way. And everybody got not to have the flu on a day where you could have got it yesterday, I'm sure.
Right.
Farmio,
yeah,
there's, Farmio, there's something right about hearing your voice this time of year, and there's also something right about Johan Moncada's approach at the plate. He is crushing balls out of ballparks. Why the change in the White Sox young third baseman?
Well, he's only hitting .450 with a couple of homers and six runs batted in, but give him time, he'll hit better. No, to be honest with you, he's starting to know the league a little bit also. The tendencies are there. He's finally made the transition of being just a guy that goes home plate and looks for the baseball, for a guy who's looking for the baseball in a certain area on a certain pitch. And when he gets to the pitch, rarely has he missed it so far this year. I mean, the ball that he hit the other day in Cleveland for the home run, I thought it was going to the second level, which is a long way from home plate.
I know we're just five games in, Ed, but what have you seen from the White Sox so far that shows the promise that they'll carry throughout the season?
Well, you've got a closer, and then you have a setup man, Jovin Herrera, setting up Alex Colomay, so you've got that part of it done. You're looking for guys to go from the long relief to the middle to a guy who's actually a bridge to get to the eighth inning. That's what you're looking for, and you're going to run those guys out there until you find them. Now you got to find that out. I'd like us to catch the ball a lot better than what we've done so far.
Yeah, and Lucas Giolito was spectacular in
terrific.
His first outing in Kansas City. That was like the old Giolito we saw the second half of the 17 season. Was that a Bugs Bunny curveball he was throwing?
He had the one that any rabbit would be happy with, I could tell you that, because straight down on the strike zone, and he was changing speeds on it, shortened his arm swing, the White Sox did, with Don Cooper and the pitching staff there, shortened his arm swing, did not throw a wild pitch in the game, where last year he had a lot of wild pitches and was all over the road, but now not the case. He was that good the other day in Cleveland, and so was Rodon in the finale, because he gave up two hits to Carlos in that first inning and an unearned run, and that was all they got off him. I think at one time he had retired, and I don't have it in front of me, but 13 or 14 batters in a row, and Giolito is on one of those strings also.
Let's talk about that final game in Cleveland the other day, Ed. Corey Kluber is one of the premier pitchers in baseball, and the White Sox just had his number from the very beginning, didn't they?
They didn't wait. Bill, you're absolutely right. They did not wait for him to do it. They didn't say, hey, look, get established. They jumped on everything, and he questioned his stuff, and you can't blame him for that. When we were on that bus with Darren and myself, and Carlos was taking that bus late because he was starting the game, I told Carlos when we got off the bus, you don't have to be the best pitcher in baseball today. You just have to be the best pitcher here at Progressive Field today. That's all you have to be. You can beat Corey Kluber. And boy, did he beat him.
He did.
So the White Sox, I mean, he threw strikes and we hit him. That's what they did.
You need to go tell that to Ronaldo Lopez, because he was not great in Kansas City. And you know, all the Sox fans have faith in him. You know, everybody loves Ronaldo. What do we need to see from him today?
Just see him calm down and you know, basically turn the game to his pace. That's what I'd like to say. Moncada has done that. He didn't do it last year, but the pace of the game revolves around that individual who's either pitching or is in the batter's box. And if they call the timeout, they're telling you, look, he's moving a little too quick for me. I'm going to play this game at my pace rather than his, and I'll step out on him, or I'll wait for the batter to put the bat down, then I'll be ready to go again.
Ed, the White Sox announced a few seasons ago that they were going into a full-blown rebuild mode. Would you say they're about on schedule in that rebuild mode or ahead of schedule?
I don't know if they're on schedule. I don't know if there's a schedule for that. That's a tough question, but I'll say this. The parts and pieces of this puzzle that we call, doing something differently because of the guys we traded, those pieces are somewhere in the organization. Mm-hmm. We've got Dylan Cease down there also, and he's one of the top pitchers in the minor leagues in all of baseball. But the White Sox are waiting for him to get developed to a point where they don't have to send him back if he runs into a bump in the road. These are good things, and we're patient enough, and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams are patient enough, and you really have to salute them for this, not to have that knee-jerk reaction of saying, okay, he's done now. He's got to go back to the minor league. No, it's like Eloy Jimenez in left field. He's going to be out there for as long as we want him to be out there, and he's going to have on-the-job training here at the big league level. And there's going to be some painful at-bats and some painful games that he's going to go through, but we also have justified him being up here by the amount of money we spent on him because he was a top prospect in our organization.
Sure. Yep.
You know, Fermio, you're right. Rick Hahn has built such a beautiful foundation there in the minors. Luis Robert had two homers yesterday.
Yes,
Zach Collins, catcher of the future, also had a couple of massive homers. But it begins with Eloy Jimenez, who broke the record for the most money ever given to a guy that had never stepped up to the MLB plate before. I think that's the trend now. It's going to follow. But everybody thought Rick Hahn was going to wait and get an extra year of control. What triggered this move? Why would Rick give him this huge extension right away instead of trying to get that extra year?
Well, I think there's twofold there, Harry, and I don't know because I don't talk to him about these business procedures, but you give the kid that kind of money, you tell him we're pinning our hopes on you. You're our best talent in the minor leagues. We're going to have you learn how to play the game of baseball at the major league level rather than put you in the minor leagues and be awestruck when you get here. We're going to make comfortability part of it. But we're also going to be mindful of, if you're not doing it, we can always send you down. But we also have him with a controlled contract as well. And for me, most valuable guy that I see with the team is Abreu. Because they come
really?
Here. Yeah, if you go down the locker room, you're going to see Jimenez and Moncada's lockers not far away. And I haven't been down there to see this, but they're not going astray far from where Abreu is because he'll tell them the right way to do things. And he's a valuable resource and a great player.
Yep, no question. Ed, we were talking about the magic that is a home opener for baseball players. You've pitched in a lot of them. You've been through a lot of them. What is that like as a player when you're going out for the first time in a season for your home team?
For me, for my home team, I was lucky enough to play here for the White Sox. And in 1980, I made the All-Star team, and it started here at Comiskey Park with two saves out of three, I believe it was, the opening series against the Baltimore Orioles. And Earl Weaver was the manager of that All-Star team. Mm-hmm. And he told me a couple years before that I couldn't pitch for him in Baltimore. Mm. And then he had to sign me because I was leading, or bring me in as an All-Star because I was leading baseball with 17 saves, and I was 6-1 when I went to the game. So I actually made him take me rather than just gift it to me. But that was for the guys that had rehabbed me from rotator cuff surgery. But growing up here as a White Sox fan, couldn't have been happier to do that. And I came back after the game, was in the clubhouse the next morning to get the questions and answers from my teammates out of the way, and also not to block Tony La Russa from doing a job. Because I think we had two seasons that year. A season where you could win the first half and the second half, and we wanted to do that.
Yep.
Fermio, my favorite White Sox opening day memory takes place in Boston, a little stadium they call Fenway Park, I believe.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, Pudge Fisk's first game with the White Sox, and the Sox are in trouble in the ninth inning. I believe you entered in the ninth inning. Take us back to that day.
I relieved Lamar Hoyt that day, and if I'm not wrong, I think that the bases were loaded. And I came in, and Carlton came out to the mound. We had not caught, he had not caught me, and I had not thrown to him because he was usually going in the fifth or sixth inning in Sarasota. And I said, they're going to pinch hit Joe Rudy. And he goes, what do you want to do? I said, I want to start him out with a fastball right down the middle. Then I want to throw him a curveball outside and not in the dirt, although I did throw him in the dirt, but he blocked it. And I said, then go back in with a fastball. And he goes, and then what? I said, then he's going to make an out. He's just going to hit a fly ball to center field or something like that because that's what he does off me. He goes, okay. So I look in for the sign. He gives me fastball, strike. Gives me a curveball. It's in the dirt. Blocks it. Throws the ball back to me. He gives me a curveball. I say, no. Gives me a slider. I go, no. He gives me a slider, and I go, from the mound. I don't have a slider. And called for the fastball outside corner, and I ran it up and in. He hit a fly ball to right, and the game was over.
Nice.
And I walked back to the Sheraton at Copley Square, and we talked about what I was doing with my fastball and my curveball.
Honesty pays off, yeah. Ed. It always
absolutely
does, doesn't it? Tell us this. The White Sox are squaring off today against the Seattle Mariners. I think they're 7-1.
They are
7-1. What's going on with them? How are they that
great? Look at their stolen bases. You don't have to look a lot further than that. They're hitting, and they're stealing bases. Do they have some pluses and some minuses? Every team does. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out what it is and play White Sox baseball and catch the ball better than what we caught it the first five games. I can tell you that because at times we have not caught the ball well. Not yet.
Fermio, please complete the sentence. 2019 will be a great year for the White Sox as long as...
As long as everybody stays the course and doesn't get caught up in what's going on negatively, but the positives will outweigh that.
Makes sense. It really makes sense. Ed, we're looking forward to today's game and a full season of fun times here on the South Side.
Bill, I'll see you and Harry over here in about 30 minutes. I've got food for you. Let's
oh,
go.
Excellent.
I was wondering about the donuts.
Yes,
yeah, they're
Steve
here.
Bertrand wants
they're
to
here.
Our donuts.
They're
here
the from
donuts
there, Bakery. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
There's more food in Fermio and DJ's broadcast booth than there is in both clubhouses combined.
Do you want me to tell those people no, they can't bring it?
No.
No. Don't say that.
I just wanted to know. I just had to have a question, that's all.
Ed, have a great
Manly's
call
already
today.
Been
we
over here, so
here.
Don't worry about it. I'll see you guys over here.
All right, have a terrific
day. Go Sox.
Day.
Opening day.
Absolutely. The great Ed Farmer, thanks, everybody. Guys. The great Ed Farmer.
Y'all having a good time out there.
Across the street from beautiful Gary Subway Field. We're at Cork and Carry on Princeton. Crowd is applauding because we found our way here. They didn't think we would, but GPS made things a lot easier, Harry. It's Bill F., of course. Harry Tynowitz is sitting in for Wendy. Steve Bertrand sitting in for himself. Here's a little game I like to play, and I know how much you love baseball, so I think you'll be good at this. Steve, play along, please. Give me an obscure player at each of the positions for the White Sox throughout history.
Wow.
Like if I went regular players and I said White Sox pitcher, you're always going to say Mark Burley. You'll say
right,
Ed Farmer.
Right.
But just give me an obscure player at each position for the White Sox. Here, let's start out with pitcher. Who's your obscure White Sox pitcher?
Oh, boy. I love this game,
yeah.
First of all.
Thank you.
I will say my obscure White Sox pitcher will be Francisco Berrios.
The late great.
Good one.
The late great.
He wore the, when the Sox had like those pallbearer uniforms.
Yes.
The smocks.
Yeah, the smocks, like the old softball ones.
Yes.
He wore 46. He was a right-handed pitcher in the 70s, and he's no longer with us.
No,
but
very sad.
He's an obscure White Sox
pitcher. Francisco Berrios, who do you have, Steve?
My knowledge isn't as deep on the South Side, but I'll go Rich Dotson.
Oh, I love Dotson.
Okay. Right.
49 and 34.
Yeah. I will go Bart Johnson.
Bart Johnson?
Yeah.
He was great.
He had a lot of hair.
He did.
A lot of hair for Bart Johnson.
He did.
All right, let's go catcher.
I'm stopping myself from the numbers.
Obscure White Sox catcher.
Brooke Fordyce is my all-time favorite White Sox catcher.
A great choice.
Thank you.
Can you beat Brooks Fordyce?
It's not obscure, but I'll go with Ron Karkovice.
Karkovice.
Karkovice. Always talked with his hands.
Allow me to go Tom Egan.
Tom Egan.
Yeah.
See, he came up with the game. This is what he does.
Yeah. Weren't you in a comedy group with Tom Egan?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
It was all former White Sox catchers. Bill Naharodny put it together.
Yes.
And we toured the countryside.
Yeah, Wayne Nordhagen was in the
group. Yeah, we had a great time. Obscure first baseman, Harry?
Obscure first baseman. How about going with a little Spanky, Mike Squires?
Oh, that's a great
choice.
That is
a good choice.
Very, very good. Anybody for you, Steve?
I'm empty there. I like Mike Squires.
Oh, come on. Think big home run hitter in the early 70s.
Richie Zisk.
Did he play first? He played right field.
But you got the first name right.
Richie Allen.
Yes.
But he's not obscure.
Well, that's the thing.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
He's not that obscure. Could I go Lamar Johnson for you?
You could. Do you remember Lamar Johnson when they had the shorts?
Yes.
They were going to wear their shorts all season, but then Lamar Johnson slid into second base.
And he skinned his knee.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
Because they had the Bactine, right? They brought the Bactine out.
The Bossard family keeps Bactine in their arsenal.
Bill, remember when we skinned our knees when we were 9 and 10?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He did it as an adult. Second base, Harry?
Second base. I'm going to say Luis Alvarado.
That's a good choice.
Juice Cruz.
Julio Cruz.
Oh, good choice.
Julio Cruz. Jorge Horta.
I'm revealing my era, right?
That's okay, though.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right.
Horta was great.
George Horta.
Horta was a home run hitter. He didn't hit a ton of them, but he could really jack out the ball late. I remember watching a game like it's midnight. I used to love it when the Sox were on the West Coast.
Yes.
You get to stay up really late.
Yes.
And they're like in the 14th inning or something, and Horta hit a home run to win it.
You tell me the White Sox couldn't use George Horta today.
They certainly could.
They sure could. Absolutely, they could.
I remember with George Horta, I'm like, well, wait, that guy's Jorge, but this guy's George.
Right.
They would switch off. Sometimes they'd call him Jorge Horta, sometimes George Horta.
Farmio would say he'd be made to Horta.
Right. He'd be right. Shortstop?
Little Hurt, Craig Graybeck.
Oh. Craig Graybeck. Totally forgot about him. Do you have a shortstop, Steve?
Bucky Dent.
They don't like him in Boston very much.
No. He did some damage with the Yankees.
Uh-huh.
I would have to play Eddie Leon.
Eddie Leon? You're right? Breaking out in Eddie Leon this morning.
Yes, I am. Third base?
Awesome.
Who do you put at third, Harry?
Who am I putting at third base? One day they had to put Mark Hill at third base, but he's not really a third
baseman. Catcher.
He's a catcher.
The booter.
Right. Give me the booter.
Yeah.
I'm going to say for third base, I'm going to say I will go with Chris Snowpack.
Chris Snowpack?
Wow. Yes.
I didn't see that coming.
He played all over.
Yep. Yeah, mostly winter ball because of the last name.
Yeah.
Okay, help me out here, you guys. One of my favorite White Sox lines. Come here, you little Mormon.
Russ Mormon,
14.
No, that was Hawk Harrelson in the locker room, I think, in 83 maybe, with Vance Law. He was going to interview Vance Law, and he's like, come over here, you little Mormon.
Wow. Jeez.
Wow. That's when they had both Rudy Law and Vance Law.
Yeah.
And Coleslaw for a little while. Played second base. I would go Kevin Bell on your obscure third baseman, right?
Oh, Kevin Bell? Yeah, he was going to be great.
Yeah. We don't have a whole lot of time, so just give me one outfielder.
Oh, boy. Lyle Mouton.
That's an excellent choice.
You know, I like Rudy Law. I used to cover the Sox a little bit in Rudy Law's day and spend some time with him in Milwaukee, so I'll go Rudy Law.
I'm going to go Buddy Bradford, who deserves a statue, Harry.
Buddy Bradford, 22, played center field for the Sox like in the late 60s, maybe early 70s.
So good. Honorable mention to Niles Nyman. I don't want to leave him out. He certainly deserves an honorable mention.
Do you remember Pat Kelly?
Yes, I do.
Pat Kelly, he had a black bat, and he used to call it his soul pole.
Commercial.
Right.
The party is happening at Cork and Carry at the Park as we celebrate the White Sox home opener on 720 WGN.
Here we are at Cork and Carry, right across from Garrett Hudrick Field. Listen to that crowd. Harry, I'm predicting a pretty good showing today. I think we're going to see a fairly decent amount of people at White Sox Park, don't you?
I think there'll be tookuses in the seats. And that should make everybody happy.
So true. It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry is filling in for Wendy. Steve Bertrand is here. John Williams is here. It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry sitting in for Wendy. John Williams is here. And Martha Jer Black is our guest. She is the coordinator of fan experiences for the Chicago White Sox, going over just some of the many fantastic things you can do, little extra fun things to do at the White Sox games. Also the co-author of the book, Joe Black, More Than a Dodger. There were a couple of things, Martha Jo, that you wanted to mention, and I don't want to leave them out, so go ahead.
No, I definitely do. We have some great news. The ticket sales department does. We have a ballpark pass, a 70... 76 home games, and it's just one pass, and it's $49.99 per month plus tax. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think you get a certain area of tickets that you get to pick from, so that's pretty amazing.
Go as many times as you want.
11 times.
Well,
I believe, yeah, which is still great for 49, and 49 is a good number since that's the number my dad wore. You know,
yes.
Okay, that's a little personal. But and we also have Bleachers and Brews this season. $22, you get a bleacher ticket and two beers. That's a pretty good deal for that.
Deal.
So, and like you mentioned, Goose Island sponsored this.
Yeah.
There's a new Goose Island area as well in the ballpark, which is great. They have open seating.
Everybody's excited about that.
Yeah,
I've heard more chatter in this bar about the Goose Island area than anything.
I mean,
waterfalls,
John. Yeah, it's waterfalls.
They have waterfalls.
Down. And then if you really get the fancy tickets in there, that area, you get your own charging phone area and everything.
Yeah?
It's really nice. And it's waiter and waitress service.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
That's even better.
Perfect. Now, with that Goose Island area, you have to buy those seats special, right? You just can't wander in, or can you?
I don't think you can wander in. You have to have a specific ticket since, you know, we are on the mobile app ticket now, so everybody should have the ballpark app.
Yeah.
So then you can download your tickets because that your phone is your ticket this time, as well as parking for some.
Yeah.
Can I tell you the funniest thing on the promotional schedule to me?
What's that, John?
Thanks for asking, Bill.
Sure.
It says... It's right next to, she mentioned the t-shirts on Thursdays, but to the left of that it says Vienna Beef Hot Dogs will be available for only $1 every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday is Dollar Hot Dog Day.
Okay.
That's like amazing. Come it's hungry.
After, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
Limit of four per person per concession visit.
Oh.
So you can go up and get four for yourself.
Right.
And then you could go to another concession stand and get another
four
for yourself. So for $8 you could get anyone?
Right. And then we have a nursing station downstairs in case you get sick from eating so many, which is really helpful.
That's pretty amazing.
Mark and Joe, when I was a kid, there was a fan experience. See if you remember this. You got to sit next to Wilbur Wood's cousin. You remember that? You'd sit through the game, and you just got to sit by Wilbur Wood's cousin.
You know, it's so funny. I was born... I shouldn't say
You're
my age
young.
Out loud. Yeah, I wasn't around. And I'm from Arizona, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't have it in Arizona.
I had to get a job after college.
Yep. Yeah,
it was horrible.
My least favorite fan experience.
What's that, Harry?
Didn't make the escape. Is Jerry Dubzinski getting caught off third base in the 83 playoffs against Baltimore.
That was a sad fan experience.
That was not good.
Are they doing a day for that or a promotion?
No, they're going to throw Jerry in the Chicago River.
Oh, no.
Ooh, Martha, your dad played with some of the all-time greats in Major League Baseball. Do you have a favorite Dodger besides your dad?
I would say, and he played there when I was younger.
What?
I met Dusty Baker
when
he played for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So, and he and my dad were very good friends. So, he's like one of my favorites, but of course my dad's my favorite. I love Campy because I met him. Don Newcomb was great.
Mm-hmm.
So, all my dad's friends were as Rick Pearson on WGN for politics. He's like, you have so many uncles. I was like, I do. So I have Ernie Banks as an uncle because I grew up with him and his kids. And I was like, my Uncle Ernie, or this and that. He goes, you have way too many. I was like, I know, because they did not want me to call them Mr. Banks, or Jerry doesn't want us to call him Mr. Reinsdorf.
Right.
It's more personable.
Right.
That's how they were, and I'm very grateful for that.
And when you say Campy, you mean Roy Campanella,
Roy
not Bert Campaneris.
Yeah, no, Roy Campanella.
All right, just making sure I know my
Campy. My dad's catcher, yes.
Oh, nice. That makes sense. You have devised some trivia questions to throw to Harry, to John, and myself. Are they difficult questions or are they easy questions?
Oh, I'm sure they know all these answers.
Harry, I'm going to need your help.
Yeah, but John, think that if she asks what day is Dollar Dog Day, you'll know.
I'm on that.
That's true. You already know that.
Make that the first one.
So now I'm going to give you something even more fun.
All right.
All right. So who won the decisive game four in the 2005 World Series for us? Which pitcher?
John, you want to take a stab at this one?
No, I'm going to let Harry do that because that's pretty easy.
So Burley came out of the bullpen in game three. Game four, I want to say Freddie Garcia.
Ooh,
you are correct.
One. Is it Freddie Garcia? Very nice.
You are correct.
That's
I was
a tough
too.
Question.
All right, so now I have another good one for you.
All right, go ahead.
Since we all know about Mark Burley.
Yeah.
Who else on the White Sox pitched a perfect game?
Mark Burley.
Well, besides him.
He pitched a perfect game and a no-hitter, right?
Yeah.
But this is two perfect games.
Right. Who else did a perfect game for us?
Not on that team.
In 2012.
In 2012. Oh, well, we should know that.
It was in Seattle. It was in Seattle. It was right-handed guy who, like, never pitched another complete game in his life.
Was it Sy Acosta?
No.
It was not Sy Acosta.
No. I didn't even know who that
Sy
is.
Sy Acosta is this Spanish-speaking pitcher. Yep. And when he would come out of the bullpen, they had to bring in this infielder, Luis Alvarado, because he was the only guy that could translate to Sy Acosta.
Yeah. Getting back to the perfect game.
Yes, the perfect game.
Come on.
All right, so Mark Burley and who else?
I can hear them screaming at their radios right now because I know this game.
It was in Seattle, weekend afternoon.
What's the answer?
Go ahead, we give up.
I can't pull it.
Philip Umber.
Philip Umber.
In Seattle.
Yep, Philip Umber, number 41.
No lumber against Philip Umber.
Right.
I
got the number. Do I get half credit?
Yes, you do, sir. I think Seattle was impressive.
Right, and you said Seattle.
That was excellent.
All right, so I'm going to talk about somebody that you guys should know, because if not, he'll never do another interview with
you. Okay,
Bob Grimm.
No, Bob Grimm is great. He will do it. How long has Ed Farmer been on the White Sox radio host?
I can do this one. 23 seasons? No?
Nope.
Why did you think you knew that so surely and you were wrong?
I thought I knew that. I thought it was 23. Because we interviewed him a few months ago, and I thought I said, this is your 24th season with the White Sox. Well, I was wrong.
I believe he was a broadcaster and a player at the same time.
Yes.
They mic'd him up out there.
And he's also a doctor, like Bill Melton.
Right.
So, yes.
Right.
Fermio.
And he's on the Army Corps of Engineers also.
Yes.
I don't know how he does
UN ambassador, whatever.
Yeah. He's a Marvel superhero.
Yes, he is.
How many seasons for Ed Farmer?
I'm going to go 22.
28.
28 seasons.
Wow. Don't tell him we were the under.
Well, there's five seasons he refuses to talk about.
We'll erase that.
How many times in the 28 seasons did he mention St. Rita?
28 years in a row.
Many, many times.
I'm definitely sure.
Martha Jo Black, it's so good to see you. We're so excited about the Chicago White Sox this season. And the fan experiences just keep getting better and better. You want to visit WhiteSox.com. All the information is there, correct?
Yes, it's definitely there. You would go to WhiteSox.com. And then when you can also call 312-674-1000 and ask for me, because as of right now, I'm the only Martha that works in the front office.
Beautiful. Good to see you.
Thank you so much. Yay.
It's time for the news, everybody. Martha Jo Black, guys.
The party is happening at Cork and Kerry at the Park as we celebrate the White Sox home opener on 720 WGN.
Yep, that's exactly what we're doing. It's Phil Leff here at Cork and Kerry, along with my friend Harry Tynowitz, who's filling in for Wendy. John Williams is also here. And our next guest is Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. HollywoodChicago.com. Talk about the film tours really quickly, Patrick. I want people to know about these film tours.
Opening day is tomorrow, and we do a tour where we take people around the city. We show them video clips, and then we show them the sites of where actual movies were shot in the great city of Chicago.
That's excellent.
Yes.
That's excellent.
What are some of the more popular sites?
Well, of course, Wrigley Field. But we do history.
Right, Ferris Bueller.
Right, we do history. They have the old SNA studios on the north side, which to me is one of the most quintessential places. And, of course, there's some really good Blues Brothers stuff in Lower Wacker. I mean, it's a great tour. It takes care of everything that you want to know about Chicago film. If you love Ferris and all that, it's all there. We're all there. So tomorrow, 12:30, Sunday, 12:30, opening weekend.
Excellent.
Thank you for the plug.
I hear nothing but good things. The movie that everybody's talking about is Jordan Peele's movie Us.
Yes.
I've heard on John's show, I've heard you discuss this movie at great lengths. I've been told I can only talk about it in five-second intervals because I'm not allowed to give anything away.
Right.
But, boy, is that an entertaining movie, Patrick.
Well, you know, I think there was a lot of mix in it. He was trying to pay an homage to his 80s, you know, those 80s sleepaway camper films.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, put his symbolism in there.
Right.
And I think those two things kind of fought each other in the film. I thought it was more conventional than Get Out.
Did you really?
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not, you know, that's just my opinion.
I have to say, of the movies I've seen in the last several years, there was more screen talking per moment than most films that I'm used to.
Interesting.
And I always want to explain to people that no matter how convincing your argument is to the people on screen, as you tell them, don't go in there or stay away from that, they filmed the movie a year and a half ago, so no matter how convincing your argument is, people are still going to do whatever they want to do
exactly.
in the movie. Right?
And we had some good shouting at the preview audience that I saw.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. All right, we're going to talk about great baseball moments in movies in a little while.
Right.
But first, let's talk about movies that are coming out this week.
Right.
I guess the one that's getting the most hype is probably Shazam.
Shazam!
Right? Yeah.
The Gomer Pyle song.
Gomer Pyle's version of Shazam.
No, it's it is the superhero movie, of course. DC Comics is putting out Shazam. The character was originally called Captain Marvel, of course.
Right.
When it came out in 1939, this is a long-time character, 80 years old,
right.
you know? And so they got the character again in 1972, but they couldn't use Captain Marvel because Stan Lee had bought Captain Marvel as
right.
the rights.
Right.
But they still called the character Captain Marvel until 2011, and here we are with the movie. They used the origin story of when they rebooted the comic in 2011. Billy Batson's no longer a newspaper boy.
Oh.
He is a he's a foster child.
Oh, okay.
Another foster child made good movie.
Yeah.
So so he goes into this foster family. One of the kids is a superhero nerd. Somehow gets on a subway in Philadelphia that takes him to the Rock of Eternity, where the wizard Shazam presides, played by Damon Honso, in a great, great role. He's kind of like George Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And, he gives him the magic word, and Zachary Levi becomes the hero. Now, they make a joke about what's his name. They don't know his name. They just know Shazam, you know, so it's really well done.
In the version I remember as a kid, the Saturday morning version, it wasn't one guy who bestowed these powers on Billy Batson.
Right.
But it was a god. It was gods that had the letters S H A Z and M.
Exactly,
right?
they're Greek gods.
Yeah.
You know, the Mercury,
Zeus,
Achilles, Zeus,
Danny.
Lesser known,
right.
Lesser known gods.
What about Dumbo? Is Danny the?
Dumbo's a different movie.
Yes,
that's a totally different movie.
Dumbo is also coming out.
Yes,
right?
It came out last week.
Right.
Yeah.
How is that doing?
Well, you know, I like the dark elements in it. I like the Tim Burton elements in it. I thought Michael Keaton was great.
Yeah.
I hope the whole movie would be about him, but the story was so lame. I mean, they had a 64-minute cartoon version that they doubled the time in.
Yeah.
All the backstory stuff. Eh. You know,
that's
three out of five, and 3 out of 5 for us too.
For Shazam?
No, for Shazam, 3 out of 5.
Three
too.
Out of five also.
I thought again it was a conventional superhero story. Again, I didn't know the new origin, so that surprised me. I thought it was going to be, you know, the lame newspaper boy again.
Yeah.
But it's more goofy than innocent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
They play it for laughs.
Right.
Right.
The whole, it felt like a paint-by-numbers version of a superhero story. Kind of fell flat for me. But it's very fun, very diversionary, more for kids, I think, than usual.
Can you explain this? For years and years and years in Hollywood, there's no movies about Captain Marvel. And then there's a movie 3 weeks ago about Marvel's Captain Marvel, and then now DC's Captain Marvel.
Stan Lee bought the title in 1967. He kept that comic revived only to maintain the copyright
to mess with DC?
Totally with DC.
Oh, that's
not
right.
He loved doing that.
Yeah.
No, he loved doing it. It was all in fun.
Yeah.
He even appeared in DC Comics later in his career when he became Stan Lee.
Right.
So, I mean, the whole Captain Marvel thing was designed to have Marvel in Marvel.
Right.
And then suddenly, here it is, a multi-million-dollar movie. I said, Allison through the looking glass has nothing on us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Now, in the Saturday morning version, it was the Shazam ISIS hour, but you can't have a hero called ISIS anymore.
Mighty ISIS.
You can't do that.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
And she was one of those that broke my latency.
Joanna Cameron. Very pretty. Very pretty. All right. That's the big movie opening this week is Shazam.
Right.
But what else is opening?
We have the Stephen King reboot called Pet Sematary. This was a reboot of the 1989 movie, and it stars Jason Clarke, Amy Steinmetz, John Lithgow. couple locates from Boston to rural Maine with their two young children. They soon discover a mysterious burial ground hidden deep in the woods.
Oh, those are the worst burial grounds, the mysterious.
Did you see the original Pet Sematary?
Loved it.
Okay, well, this one is getting high reviews. I didn't review it, but I very high reviews on the interwebs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the other one, of course, is The Best of Enemies to Raji B. Henson, Sam Rockwell, play real-life Ann Atwater and C.P. Ellis, a civil rights leader and KK member who must solve a school-ordered desegregation process in the early 70s. With Green Book winning Best Picture, aren't we done with these buddy pictures?
Oh, interesting.
Aren't we done with them? So,
Is there a mysterious burial ground in this one?
I hope so.
I love the mysterious burial ground.
They should put the KKK in it.
We're about 4 weeks away from Long Shot. I'm hearing great things about Long Shot.
I just saw the preview. It's an amazing, fun movie. I love that movie. I want to say anything else. But
Watch that one.
Yeah, the new Seth Rogen movie.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. More with Patrick O'Donnell as he takes us through some great baseball movies, great baseball moments in movies.
With the White Sox.
With the White Sox.
That's right.
Specialized it. I love that.
Specialized.
Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. Visit the website, HollywoodChicago.com. Patrick, over the years, there have been so many great baseball movies, but you wanted to focus especially on the Chicago White Sox.
That's right. Yeah. Their appearances in the movies over the years, it's pretty strong, I would say.
Have there been any movies specifically about the Chicago White Sox, or are they always...
not so much specifically, but they're always in the background. The top three, of course, is Eight Men Out, Field
about
of
the
Dreams.
Scandal.
Right. About the scandal 100 years ago this very year.
It does not paint Charlie Comiskey in a good light.
No, it does not.
The old Roman.
All right, so that was the first one.
Yes. And then Field of Dreams, of course, when the 1919 White Sox come out of the cornfield to get redemption.
You know, Ray Liotta's no longer smoking. Did you see this?
I was not aware of that, sir.
I barely recognize the guy.
Wow.
He just totally stopped smoking.
He needs to smoke.
Chantix. He's using the Chantix.
Nice aside, Bill.
Yeah, thank you.
And he was a right-handed shoeless Joe Jackson because, of course, he was left-handed.
Didn't that also happen in Pride of the Yankees where Gary Cooper, they filmed him one way and they had to reverse the film?
Exactly. Right? They filmed him in reverse. They have a picture of him with the logo backwards. They also did that in the Babe Ruth story with William Bendix.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Also filmed at the old Comiskey Park.
That's right.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes. Yeah, Pride of the Yankees.
Yep. That's where Lou Gehrig meets his wife.
Tanglefoot.
Tanglefoot, the very big Tanglefoot scene, exactly. Very good, Harry.
All right, so did you mention all three or did you mention two?
No, two. The third one is the Stratton story, Jimmy Stratton. Right, 1949, he pitched for the White Sox in the 1930s. He lost his leg in a hunting accident. He never came back to the majors. That seems to be like a misnomer, but he did play again.
In the movie,
and,
Patrick, did they show him pitching in the majors afterwards? They did, right? Or they
did they? I can't remember. I
believe they did.
Yeah.
So they
but
had
the
one,
real story is he only pitched in the minor leagues.
So the White Sox at one point had Monty Stratton, who did not have a leg, and they also had Jim Abbott, who was without an arm, right?
Yeah, eventually. Yeah.
If they could have signed Tom Dempsey.
Tom Dempsey was missing a foot?
Yeah, half a foot.
Walt Williams?
No neck.
He could have kicked the baseball.
Right, Albert Bell? No heart.
And there's that guy in the NFL right now.
We're this close to coming up with our fantasy three-limb team.
Right. The White Sox have won the league, I think, in that. That's fantastic.
You can borrow them from other teams, other sports, but let's just get 27 limbs out there.
Right. That's all we ask.
So I have to mention three great cameos of the White Sox.
These are other movies that featured White Sox players at some point in the movie.
And we're going to start with a Bill Left starring film, Major League 2.
Yes.
Of course, we have Jack Parkman, played by the great David Keith, who faces off in the batter's box against Wild Thing Charlie Sheen,
right?
And he is a White Sox slugger.
So. Many people have called that movie Major League 2 the Casablanca of our generation.
Yes,
do you
see it that way?
Are those people at this table right
none
now?
None of them are. No.
Okay.
None of them are.
Just wondering.
Nope.
And right, we mentioned Pride of the Yankees, and of course, Only the Lonely with John Candy, the famous picnic scene in Old Comiskey Park.
A beautiful scene.
2 weeks before the first wrecking ball hit.
How about that? But a very, very nice scene. Was that their second date or something in the movie?
I believe so. Yeah. And you know, he was connected because he was a cop. But the thing was, John Hughes produced the movie. Chris Columbus directed.
Right.
But Hughes wanted to film the Ferris Bueller scene in Old Comiskey because he was a White Sox fan. But he couldn't do it because of schedule. And I think Ferris Bueller and Wrigley Field is part of the legacy of why Wrigley Field is popular.
Right. You know? Yeah, right. And Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that great movie, too.
Bill, what was your favorite scene in Only the Lonely?
That would be the scenes that my wife is in. My wife, Terry, plays John Candy's sister-in-law in that movie.
She's
in it quite a bit. And her kids are played by Macaulay and Kieran Culkin in that movie.
Oh, my gosh.
How about that?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And also, too, your legacy in baseball movies in the family is crazy.
Right. Yeah, well, I told you this. After the second major league movie, my grandparents thought I was in every baseball movie. So they would say, hey, we watched Pride of the Yankees last night. I'd go, yeah. You were great in it. I don't think I was in Pride of the Yankees. But thank you for that.
Angels in the outfield. Yeah, I was one of the Angels.
Yeah.
All right.
No big deal. All right, and then you have another one, another White Sox cameo in a movie or not?
We talked about it. We talked about it, Pride of the Yankees. Lou Gehrig meets his wife, Eleanor, at Comiskey Park, Old Comiskey Park, and they actually filmed there.
If you had to pick the best baseball movies of all time, Pride of the Yankees would certainly be up there, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What is it about that movie that's so great?
I think the combination of sentimentality, the time it was done, Gary Cooper is Lou Gehrig, and the fact that, you know, of course, Gehrig met a tragic end.
Yeah.
And you just, the combination and the way they put it together in the context of how baseball was back then and how movies were back then, it's like a beautiful history lesson.
Where is we're talking about all the male baseball movies.
Yes.
But I believe there's a certain female baseball movie filmed in this city. Where's that rank?
A League of Their Own.
Well, you know, a League of Their Own is a classic sort of background movie where World War II is the forefront, and of course they had to start a new baseball league because the men were going off to war.
Right.
Now they did film a key scene in Wrigley Field, the scene where everybody tries out.
Right.
And I have that on the tour.
The most iconic line in the movie, Patrick, for my money, there's no crying in baseball.
That's right.
Because you know what? As Chicago fans, we know that there is crying in baseball.
Oh, there's a lot of crying.
There's a lot of crying.
Where are you guys all on The Natural? Do we love that, or do we think that movie's too weird?
Here's the thing about The Natural. The book is a classic. Have you ever read the Bernard Malamud book? Okay, you must. It is one of the great baseball novels ever written, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The ending in the movie is different from the ending in the book. And, at the time, I thought it suffered. Now I think it's a classic.
Yeah, I do.
By the way,
that team we were making earlier with the guys that had, like, you know, half an arm, half a foot.
Yeah.
I figured out who could sing the national anthem
for
us.
Who would that be, Harry?
Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, you're so good.
You're still working on that.
Yeah.
Okay. You're so good. What's the worst baseball movie of all time?
Oh, gosh.
That's fair or unfair? Is that unfair?
Well, name something.
They're not here, Bill.
What was that one with Jim Belushi where the Cubs were winning the World Series and he was part of it? I can't remember the name.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
That's not good.
Was that just a dream you had or was that an actual movie? That could have been a dream. Patrick, we're so glad
you came out. Jim Belushi. Hi.
Is he here? Hi, Jimmy. Nice to see you.
You're the best.
It's Patrick McDonald, everybody. Go to HollywoodChicago.com.
Yep.
We're going to turn things over. Absolutely.
Undrafted.
We're going to turn things over to John in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill Left, Harry Tynowitz, and for Wendy on WGN.
White Sox are home, and it's a party. Live from Cork and Kerry at the Park, it's our home opener bash, sponsored by Goose Island Beer on 720 WGN.
And we're live at Cork and Kerry at the Park. Steve Bertrand here, John Williams as well, as we get set for opening day just across the park here at Guaranteed Rate Field as the White Sox take on Seattle. John, you've been sitting in for an hour now, right?
Yeah, that announcement was right. It really is a party. When I got here, this place was already cooking, and I've been here since 10. Of course, we've been here longer than that, but this place has been packed all morning long.
I was just telling Ben at Wakenight, the producer, you're getting to the point now where you can start to see people tilt a little bit when they talk.
As long as they tilt towards the park, I think it's good.
One of the reasons they're tilting is Goose Island Beer. Todd Ashman is with us, the president of Goose Island. Todd, we've talked a lot, mostly on opening day, I think. Welcome back.
Tilters.
You're not a tilter yet, are you?
I was here at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Well, you were here at 9 a.m. because there was a big ribbon cutting over at Guaranteed Rate Park, right? Explain that for me.
There was. We now have a goose island at the park at Guaranteed Rate Field. We in right field, we built a water system that goes around to mimic the real goose island.
Is that an ice slide today, or is that flowing water?
It is flowing water. I can't wait to see what Sox fans do with it, especially in late innings.
Is it the kind of thing you can jump into?
It's the kind of thing you could slide down.
Is it a pool? Is it a wading pool? Is it for public use?
So it's like a moat, but it is exposed.
And it's for the people in that Goose Island area.
Yeah, so we took over two sections of right field, surrounded it with water, put some nice TVs in there, some really nice seats. There's some wait staff that will be serving people out there. But it was
a major rehab, right? It's a major rehab of a big part of the park.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be one of the best outfields in baseball.
Is that your investment or is that the White Sox? How does that happen?
That's part of the sponsorship deal that we have with the White Sox. Yeah, we worked with them, and it's a marketing deal.
You know, I go back to the earliest days of Goose Island when the brewery first opened off Clyburn, when it was basically the only thing there. I mean, the growth has been incredible since then. But tell me about the significance of a North Side company moving to the South Side and the White Sox fans.
You're trying to get me to say some not nice stuff, right?
No, I am not.
No, but that's a nice stuff thing to say.
So our brewery is at Fulton and Wood, and I did the Google Maps. We are 0.1 miles closer to Guaranteed Rate Field than we are Wrigley Field.
Yeah. But this opens up a great, I mean, this exposes you to people who might not have been earlier.
Oh, yeah. I've been a Sox fan since I was a little kid, as is my whole family and my wife's family and my friends. So for me, it's a dream come true. I still can't believe that we are part of the White Sox organization, and I'm down here on opening day talking about a right field that's associated with Goose Island.
So this is the time, if you were going to say something to get yourself in trouble, you could do it now.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, back in 1983, my friend Greg Hall and I, who I'm staring at right now, and Marianne Martini, who I'm looking at, when they had clinched it to go to the playoffs, we jumped over the right field wall.
In 83?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had season tickets there that year.
Yeah, there you go. And last year, Jerry Reinsdorf approached me. They pulled a fast one on me, and he said, "We've been looking for you for all these years, the guy that jumped the wall." So it feels like a family organization to me.
Tell me, too, I hear you have a new flavor coming out this summer, a local beer for local taverns.
We do. It's called Born and Raised. It was based on a beer that was made from the first brewery in Chicago, Lil Diversi. Before the Chicago Fire, it was the most popular beer in Chicago. It was a cream ale, but we mimicked that recipe, and we're calling it Born and Raised. It will be a Chicago-only beer forever. I'm making that promise.
You're never going to distribute that elsewhere?
Never, ever, no matter what.
And it's, you know the recipe? How do you know that you're creating the actual beer here? Do they have it? I mean, it must be like on a 5x7 note card somebody had squirreled away the original recipe for that beer?
That would be, I'm going to keep that a secret and so nobody else finds that recipe. But yeah, we had a good idea what the original recipe was.
It's going to be available only on tap, or are you going to bottle it too?
Right now it's only on draft. We'll play that one by ear, but yeah, it's only on draft right now, Born and Raised.
But only in Chicago.
Only in Chicago, yeah.
And it's a cream ale or a cream ale? What will this be like? What would be akin to?
We're calling it a Chicago-style ale, but yes, it is. If you had to associate it with a style, it would be a cream ale. Cream ales are not creamy. But yeah, let's go with Chicago-style ale.
And when is that available, Todd?
You don't have any with you, do you?
It's sitting in front of me right now.
Is that right?
Oh, that's one of them? Oh, my gosh, I really want to try one.
Yeah, if I didn't have this microphone two inches away from my mouth.
Maybe Steve or I could, while you're talking about it, just take a little sip. How would you feel about that? Are you one of those people that's uncomfortable with us trying your beer?
No, I'd feel upset if you didn't try it.
Okay, here I go.
I'm in, Steve.
I wouldn't do that, Todd. That was a baby sip, too.
Oh, that's nice. Wow. Yeah, it's not like it's not creamy. Like you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
Would you describe those as citrus notes or what is that? Mm.
Yeah, you might be picking up some citrus notes, but it's just a very drinkable beer.
Yeah,
it's,
that's delightful.
So. Let's call it something on opening day. If you started at 9 a.m. like I did, it'd be the perfect beer to have all
day. I was going to say, does it get better or gets worse? I bet if it gets better as the day goes on.
Absolutely better.
So I was out with my son, who just turned 21 a few months ago. It was father-son night. We were out for a beer, and he ordered a 312. And so I started thinking of you guys, and I don't know if you picked up on the 312 for me or if you got it elsewhere, but how... You know, well, I mean, Goose Island is a fun company. You know, you practical jokes and all that fun stuff. But how do you market to a young audience without attracting young audience to build up their sort of allegiance, but not to attract too young of an audience, right? I mean, there must be some sort of strategy there.
I don't know if we go that deep. Of course, we want 21-year-olds like your son to be right. drinking our beer, but we just, you know... Our marketing is Chicago, but we're all over the world now, and we, you know, I think we do a much better job of promoting Chicago than Chicago Fire or Chicago Med or whatever those shows are.
Right. No, I had a 312 in Oslo last year.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, absolutely, the bar in Oslo. Yeah, on tap.
But yeah, we promote Chicago. So if you're a Chicago, and I would hope you like our beer, whether you're 21 years old or 91 years old.
Was there ever a concern about getting too big? Is there a niche that some beers have and you don't want to be too large, or is that silly talk?
No, when we opened in 1988, we were the first brew pub in Chicago, and nobody knew what craft beer was. So our mission was always to expose people to the beer we were making. So the fact that people are drinking our beer all over the world, I don't think that's too big. I think that's wonderful, and I love it. I still get freaked out when I go to Cleveland and see our beer, let alone, you know, Shanghai.
It's pretty cool when you're in a bar in Oslo, and the best beer available is one that came out of Chicago.
Well, I appreciate that.
Todd Ashman, the president of Goose Island Beer, will see you in right field this summer.
Absolutely. See you there. Cheers.
The Goose Island is cold, the party is happening, and we are welcoming the White Sox back to Chicago. It's always a good time. The home opener bash continues on 720 WGN.
All right, Steve Bertrand here, John Williams as well, and Dave Bennett joins us as we've got just a few minutes left before we go across to Guaranteed Rate Field and opening day. Johnny?
A lot of celebrities are here. Dave Bennett, Rokan, Anita Alvarez is in this bar.
I'm so tempted, but I didn't.
There's a lot of good interviews in this bar, but today isn't the day and this isn't the place. But it's fun to be over here at Cork and Kerry as we were last year. Dave, what's the highlight of the game going to be? Do you make predictions?
Wow, let's see. Predictions. Well, how about, you know, the one thing we're still waiting for with this team is to see Eloy Jimenez hit his first Major League home run. How dramatic would that be, have it happen on opening day?
I like that he's got some at-bats on the road before he comes home.
You know, and I'll tell you, he doesn't look overmatched at all at the plate. He looks like he's very comfortable. I think one thing is these guys come up with all of the tools that are available to players today in terms of video, in terms of being able to watch opposing pitchers ahead of time. And he just looks like a guy who, even though he hasn't, I mean, he's coming off a two-hit game the other day in Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah.
He hasn't had that huge breakout game yet, but he's had some really good at-bats, and you just get the sense that those are going to come more frequently.
One thing I like, I think I'm right about this, his first two RBI of the season came on walks.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, a hit by pitch, his first one.
I'll count
same,
that.
Same difference. Same
but
difference.
I like his. I don't know. Is he swinging at a lot of bad pitches? I don't know that we've seen enough to know. But.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't seem that way. I mean, I think he's been fooled, and pitchers are going to do that. I mean, you know, you're going against the best pitchers in the world too. That's the other thing to keep in mind.
And so the season, season began, of course, but opening day today, I was walking around the park. It's drying out now. You know, it's so damp earlier today. I think it's going to be much more comfortable than we thought a couple of hours ago. How do the White Sox measure this season?
That's a great question.
That is a good question.
That's a really good question.
Boy, Steve, that is a good question.
I think some
sat up in the middle of the night last night with Alex.
As questions go, yeah. That was a really good question.
Thank you so much.
Let's go to Dave Ennett.
Well, because you want to see progress, and it's hard to envision they won't make progress. This certainly looks like a better team, and it looks like a team that, from a team that lost 100 games a year ago, I think expectations, and this is a good thing, Steve, is expectations have been raised, and I think people will be disappointed if they don't make a fairly substantial leap. Now, is that to win 70-some-odd games this year, to maybe get close to the 500 mark? I think things have to fit properly and fall properly. I think they've got the chance to do that, especially if they start well, because they're playing a lot of teams early on that have struggles of their own.
Well, I think you've also seen some things you want to see, like Moncada hitting well. We have seen some good pitching performances. You can see the pieces that are there, and if they aren't all meshing yet. I'm such a patient Sox fan now, Dave. I became the world's biggest Sox fan last year.
Right.
What a coincidence. And I'm really anxious for next year. What I want to just see is like what Steve's alluding to. Let's just see growth in the right places this year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you want to see guys, like I think already Moncada looks like a better player than he was a year ago. And
like the guy we thought we got.
He struck out 217 times last year. He's struck out three times so far in 23 plate appearances. So I think you take that. You look for, you know what you're going to get from Jose Abreu, I think, at this point in his career. But it's to see how some of these young guys develop. Will Tim Anderson become more consistent? Because we've seen what he can be. And, I think if you factor all that in, look, people are worried about Daniel Falke. He's not hitting. The guy is showing he can hit. So I think he'll come around.
All right, that's Dave Ennett, John Williams here. I'm Steve Bertrand. We've got baseball just around the corner here on 720 WGN.